morning, everyone. The Mary Griffith Show is underway on Thursday, August 18th, and this is the third Thursday of the month. Guess what? That means our master gardener is here. Deborah Lee has a PhD in health and nutrition. She is the owner of Four Winds Farm and Holistic Emotional Health at 3729 North 36th Street in Quincy. And you can get her at 4-winds-farm.com. And she always comes by, she or another natural master gardener, usually it's Deborah, comes by on this day to tell us what's going on. And, hey, this is a beautiful day to spend in the garden. My golly, we've got spring-like temperatures out there.
What a lovely week to be outdoors playing in the soil.
Playing in the soil. And actually, I thought our garden was done, but you say, no, I can go into phase two. There are some cooler weather plants that if you planted early in the spring in those cool weather times and you harvested all that stuff by now, you could get a second crop by planting cool weather crops again because,
right. And this well, is the time.
You know, this is the time. So tell us about what we can plant.
So as it gets cooler, we have the cool crops that include some lettuces and also kale and collards and broccoli and things like that. Also root vegetables like radishes and the long daikon radishes that can be like, 2 or 3 feet long, really deep. And when you plant these items and a few more in the fall, then they don't get that harsh, hot taste. Like all of these, you usually have to plant a bit early in the spring or maybe about, I don't know, depending on what the weather's like. You might plant it in April or May. But now that you're planting it, it's going to get cooler. And so the flavor is going to be almost sweet. It's not going to have that harsh, biting taste to it. And it's fun to be outside harvesting when it's rather cool out. And sometimes, like the weather that we've had into December, sometimes things will really last almost into Christmas, which is kind of exciting.
It's pretty amazing. Of course, we always say be careful before Mother's Day because we could get a frost. So certain things you have to be very careful planting before Mother's Day each year, kind of a rule of thumb. And then they say, well, be careful that's our last frost. When is our first frost? Some could be as early as October sometimes.
It's been very erratic. A few years ago, we had one. Oh, I think it was like the middle of October.
Yeah,
we had a harsh frost. And that, of course, can be very frustrating if you have a lot of crops out. You might have to have what I call the big cover-up campaign with all sorts of containers and other things. But it hasn't been that way the last couple of years. I think last year it was it was very warm, Christmas and Thanksgiving all around there. So it's fun to try that. You know, you don't have to have a huge garden, but just get some things. Beets also are another thing. And potatoes, you can get often a second planting of potatoes in. So try that if people are interested.
Yeah, that's really great. So anything you could plant early in the spring, you can also plant early in the fall.
Pretty much.
When it gets cool and hope that you get a second crop. And the great thing about it is, you just get that double blessing. Now, spring onions. Can you do a second crop of spring onions or is that verboten?
You know, I don't know. I've never
done
it.
Try, right? Yeah, you could just
because
try.
Because it's hard to find the sets.
Hard to find the sets probably now, that's for sure. I saw potting soil on sale the other day. I mean, the enormal bag, more than 5 pounds,
the enormous bag.
And I imagine that there's going to be a lot of people doing repotting and maybe bringing some things in, and we'll talk about that. But
good thing to talk
that
about.
That is a hard thing to get. Once potting soil goes away, they don't put the shelf, they get a Christmas and everything in there. They don't have room for all that stuff. They turn everything into Christmas and Halloween. And so, if you're going to need potting soil for the fall, you might want to go and get some now.
That's a really, really good point because some of the containers maybe have just kind of lost a lot of their vitality. I often use the same containers over and over again. That's really not the best idea. Master gardeners learn to not do that, to dump everything out because there could be fungus or other problems. But I haven't had any problems, and I just can't stand to do all that. But when I do my containers, if they're big at all, I'll put down grass clippings or straw in the bottom. And then I'll maybe put some other soil from my garden, which I know is really good. And then I'll put a little composted material in there and then the potting mix and kind of stir that all around. And so it's less expensive and it still gives you a really good blend. The stuff I put in first, I usually just leave that on the bottom.
Right, just kind of leave it on the bottom.
And
maybe stir it around a little bit, but, you know, basically you don't, if it's the lazy man's way to do things, but let's face it, we're not all going to be perfect. So if the lazy man's way to do things is the way you're going to do it, then Dr. Deborah Lee says it's okay. Stir up what's in there and then just augment on top of that with your new fresh stuff, including, you know, fertilization and potting soil and all that stuff and compost. Now, I used a lot of compost this year, and I found I got shrinkage. Every time I watered my plants, I got a lot of dirt water out. Like the dirt was leaching more.
Ran out the
bottom. Yeah, like, you know, I keep it in a saucer, so I try to do it till the saucer fills so that it will then retake that back up. That saucer always was full of what I call dirty water instead of more clear water. And I think it was just the kind of compost I got this year. I just got it down at the Quincy compost pile. It was different texture this year. I don't think
That's another kind of good reason to put, if you have the opportunity for a little straw or grass clippings in the bottom, it sort of filters that.
Yeah, to filter
that. Keeps the soil inside the container.
Now, if you want to do it the proper way.
Yes.
The way that the University of Illinois Master Gardeners recommend, you would eradicate or at least empty out all of the pots. Maybe put them back in the compost pile to be reinvigorated with some new stuff.
Sure.
And you would thoroughly clean each pot, and you would probably use a bleach solution or something.
Mild bleach solution to sterilize it.
And the reason you need to sterilize the pot is because?
Because there could be some kind of diseased plants in there.
So any kind of fungus or any kind of leaf rot or any kind of thing that you had, if you don't want it next year, then two things have to happen. You have to sterilize that pot, which means you have to thoroughly clean it, scrub it, and bleach it. And then the other thing is, if you're afraid the dirt may be contaminated, even though we don't want to waste things, we don't want to throw that back into something that we're going to then spread it all over the place.
We really have to use our common sense. If there's some kind of disease that you can tell or the plants are dying, you might not know exactly what it is, but if you've had problems with it other than just maybe not watering it enough, and you really need to pay attention to that and get rid of all the material that's in the container.
I know my peonies. Now, this year my peonies were weird. I only got one blooming.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't very prolific. But it didn't get that white rot that it always gets all over it. Now, when it used to get that white junk on it, I was very careful to trim all that off, and I would, you know, make sure it didn't go into the compost pile. I made sure it, you know, was thrown away or destroyed in some other way because I didn't want to send my problem to somebody else.
This is a good point, if I can butt
Please
in here
do.
For a second.
Yeah.
I've had that with some echinacea and some other things where they have just an abnormal growth on them. It just doesn't look right. And that's a disease. Now, when I'm out snipping all my flowers and if I'm using the same clippers that I have, do I want to clip those diseased plants with the same clippers? No, because that can get on the blades. And so I do that separately with a separate pair, and then I try to walk around with a bucket of water that has some bleach in it. So if there is something like that, I'll dip my clippers in the bleach. And I try to do that, you know, when I'm out, because I'll be cutting a lot of flowers to make bouquets.
You have a huge farm.
And so
but
I'll go through
good
there,
for
though.
Anybody.
Yeah, it doesn't take much effort. Just have a small bucket of water there with a little bit of bleach in it, and then you can get that so you don't want to spread that disease into the rest of your flowers.
We're talking today with Deborah Lee. She has her PhD in health and nutrition, and she is a master gardener. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Deborah Lee, 223-9300, 1-800-228-9823. This is the place to get your questions answered, folks. She's an expert. I mean, if you stump her, that's fine. But, you know, we'll give her some time to maybe think and take a commercial break and come back, and she'll have a good answer for you. So call now. We want to get as many questions in as possible. Something happened this summer that I thought was rather amusing. My brother-in-law used to work in a nursery. Well, so did my husband. But my brother-in-law, like, really worked in a nursery, like, as an adult. Not as a kid like my husband. So they pretty much, they understand how to take care of trees and plants. Okay. Well, we planted this new tree, and Tim comes over and goes, you got to trim that thing up. That thing's going to be terrible if you don't get rid of some of those branches. I said, well, what do you mean? So he went over and just, he just was like, didn't take a machete, but he took some kind of, you know, really sharp tool that he carries with him.
And what time of the year was this?
This was a couple of months ago.
Okay.
He just cut the... It looked like a troll. There was just one branch up the middle with a little troll top on top. I said, that looks horrible. But you know what? It's great because that tree has continued to grow.
Yes.
Those side branches aren't going out, so it's going to grow tall, and we're not going to have to duck under it when we do the lawnmower. You got to get that stuff. Now, it probably wasn't the best time to do it, and he admits.
Well, that's why I asked you, but this brings up a good point.
Yeah, my husband put that black stuff over it to help, you know, they know how to do this. But the bottom line is there's probably a best time to do this stuff, but sometimes now is the time to do it. If you're going to procrastinate, just do it now and then do it correctly.
Do it pretty quickly because we're getting pretty close to the end of the season. I remember I learned this lesson. I had some just gorgeous, huge sage sage plants.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to tidy everything up, so I cut them back. And I thought they would come back again. And I did the same thing with some other plants, and they didn't because it was too late in the year. And if you think about what plants are doing in the fall when it starts to get cooler, all the energy is going down in the roots to save them. So if you cut all that off, it's not it confuses them. So if they realize, oh, yeah, I've got to grow branches now, then they don't have enough in their roots and they might die. And I had that happen with those and some butterfly plants. And so, you know, you learn. It's always a learning opportunity. We often do things that don't work out. But we it's kind of getting to that time. August is about the last time when you really want to go out and be trimming anything.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
now,
you trim your trees and your shrubs in the winter.
My husband is not listening, but I'm going to tell him what you said. We have two burning bushes. He's such a freak about keeping them from getting too big that he trims them.
And they do get, they can
they
get
can,
out of
but
control.
But the trouble is, he wants to trim them now. I said, wait till they burn. What the freak is the point of having a burning bush if you never let it turn that beautiful red?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. But
yes,
he says, well, I don't have time in November. I said, I don't care. You have to. So one of them he already cut back. And I put my foot down, Dr. Deborah Lee. You're going to have to help me with this. I said, the one out in the middle of our yard on our berm, it's beautiful. People comment on it. I said, I don't care. We'll really drastically trim it back, you know, after it burns. Because what's the point of trimming your burn? Because it's convenient for him. But I don't care about his convenience. I want my burning bush to burn. So when should I, as soon as it's done burning, should then we trim it or do we wait till spring?
You know what I do, which is not always the research thing.
She is an expert, but she often doesn't take her own advice.
Right. But mine doesn't really grow that much.
Oh, my gosh.
And
ours
so
is crazy.
And so I have several of them, and I certainly the fall color is what you want.
Yeah.
And so if you're cutting ahead of time, you know, it's just kind of a crapshoot. You're not sure if you're cutting. You know, it just depends on what week or month it is. But in my opinion, it would be better to not trim it any time now or even in the summer. And then in the winter is the best time to snip things down a little bit because all the energy's in the roots.
All the energy's already gone down to the root.
And then again, you have to know each tree and each shrub. It's good to Google it and do a little bit of research. Go to the U of I Extension. There's information on anything you want to know about plants. And just know how you trim it and what time of the year. Because you get into some things like arborvitae. Boy, those are really easy to screw them up and make them look terrible if you don't know what you're doing or when to trim them. So,
okay.
So
my neighbor
is available.
My neighbor has the most beautiful, big, puffy, white snowball bush. Some people call it a snowball bush. Oh, it's gorgeous. I'm hoping maybe they'll go out of town and I can go snip a few things off if they won't notice and put it in.
Well, those should be fine.
Yeah.
To cut
but
the flowers
I mean, you know,
off.
I don't think she'd appreciate it if I cut her flowers off. But one of my girlfriends gave me, and it was a snowball bush, kind of, but it wasn't a snowball shape. It was more of a pear shaped. It was like a triangle with more at the top than the bottom. But she sent some clippings over. We put them in a vase and they lasted for 4 weeks.
Mm.
I was really amazed at the vitality of that. So,
especially to change the water every few days.
Bears fan, if you are listening, we are not trimming that one burning bush. You already got to one of them, but I'm not letting you touch that burning bush till it turns bright red. So keep your clippers off my burning bush.
This would be a good experiment, Mary.
I didn't plan it. I don't take care of it.
You can tell you have two trees now. You're going to do one thing with one and the other, and it'll be an interesting experiment.
Well, ours get out of control. One by our house, I mean, if he doesn't take the electric hedge clippers to that thing will, I mean, pretty soon it would eat our house. I mean, it's crazy how big that one gets. But anyway.
I want to talk about mold a little
bit. Yeah, well,
we
all want to talk about mold. speak on mold, if you don't mind.
Sure. This time of the year, You know, I live at what I call Four Winds Farm because it's windy out there. But this time of the year, there often isn't a lot of breeze. And when I water, I have a number of ways that I water. But if I am, I try to water when there is some breeze and wind, especially now as we're coming into this late summer. Because on zinnias and on other kinds of plants, then it can get a mold. And anybody that grows zinnias will know that. And if you're real careful, you could go and strip off some of those bottom leaves. But I, for my zinnias, I don't like to have the water. I have, if there's a drip hose underneath and it doesn't shoot up, that's fine. But some of the irrigation systems will shoot up a couple of feet. And there it is, all that moisture there. And if there's not enough rain, pretty soon that fungus is going to be creeping up the entire plant. So if you see it, try to cut some of the leaves off and do the best that you can with that. And then also with basil, that's a problem now. I take basil and I clip a lot of it and put in little containers and take it out to sell at the farm stand. But now it's just moist and there's no breeze that's really blowing. And so I have to be very, very careful because if when you pick your basil, if you put it in some kind of container in the refrigerator, then right around all the areas where there's a little bit more moisture in the middle of the leaves, it's going to turn kind of purplish black. It's not going to really be a problem. It's not going to kill you or hurt you, but it just looks bad.
It looks bad, and it doesn't taste. The
basil is not really tasting quite as great right now anyway, because especially like if we get a nice rain. So that you have to pay some attention to. If you have a little basil patch, you don't want to be out there watering it in the evening. Ideally, we're not supposed to water in the evening because of this situation where the water will stay there and can create some kind of mold or fungus problem.
It is so amazing, and gardeners learn by experiment, by experience. By screwing up. But the problem with that is, you know, when you screw up, you don't want to screw up. And I tell you, it's just amazing. We had so many green onions this year, spring onions. We're going to be eating spring onions. We put them in the freezer. I mean, we had a harvest that was unbelievable this year. You never can tell. Now, my grapes, I don't know. They're still green. And the birds are kind of like just going, when will they leave? So we can those will turn purple. The day those turn purple, we're coming for them. But our cherries this year, zippity-doo-dah. We got one quart of cherries off of that whole tree.
No.
So, you know, I can't. You just never know what Mother Nature's going to give you, which always amazes me because back in the olden days, you had to live on what you planted.
Sure.
And, of course, you could store some things. You could can some things. But I'm like, if you were expecting to eat cherries in the winter to get you through Little House on the Prairie, you're going to die. But if you like spring onions, there's going to be a lot of spring onions this year. Deborah Lee is my guest today. We're going to take a break, head up to the Ursa Farmers Cooperative. Golden Harvest brings you this report from the Ursa Farmers Cooperative. And when we come back, more with Deborah Lee, our master gardener. And if you want to have a phone call, call now, 223-9300, 1-800-228-9823. The best part about local radio, you can call in and talk to experts live on the air. And we have a gentleman who has done just that. He has waited patiently. Good morning. What is your question for our master gardener, Deborah Lee?
Yes, I want to plant some turnip seed a half inch deep so that I don't is there any trick to doing that so they don't have to be thinned out? Seeds are so tiny, and I tried planting them in rows, and I didn't have the patience to try to put one seed in every 3 inches. Thank
right.
You.
I'm having a little trouble hearing you here.
Those in one every 3 inches is hard.
Right. It is. But it's good to plant them about a fourth of an inch to an inch deep. And what I often do is I get a few that I have of seeds of, you know, anything that's small, and I get a few in my hand, and I just try to sprinkle them out there a little bit. And as they begin to grow, if you get too many close together, you can always go in a week or two later and pull some of them out. But turnips are wonderful to grow this time of the year because as they get bigger into the winter, they don't have that hot, harsh taste. They have just a really nice little pungent flavor to them.
So does that answer your question? I know you don't want to go in and clear them out, but like you said, a turnip seed is very small, so you may have to.
You try to do them about an inch apart.
Yeah.
Yep.
you know, okay. And then the rows about
Thank
a foot.
You.
Thank you. So, you know, this is another lazy man like me. He wants to avoid that step, but you're saying because the turnip seed is so small, because they have to be about an inch apart, you're probably going to have to do some picking.
And, you know, it might be a little easier for me with small hands, you know, smaller hands, so I can maybe put them a little bit easier that way. And if somebody has larger hands, then it might be more difficult. But still, you're just going to have to probably pull
it. Grab
a
really small child and tell them you just want one seed in every little thing that you put down there. And they'll have the patience and they'll have the dexterity
to do it. If you have plenty of space, then it's okay. You can scatter them out a little bit more, too.
So let's talk a little bit more about, you know, we're here, we're in the dog days of summer. It is still August. Today is an outlier. Mm-hmm. We haven't had weather this cool since June. But, you know, we'll still have some hot days. So this is cool time. You can definitely replant. Start a second crop of lettuce, kale, broccoli, collards, radishes, daikon radishes especially, even potatoes and beets. You can still get those in, turnips. My gosh, when I was up in Alaska, of course they have a 21, 22-hour-a-day growing.
Oh.
The rhubarb up there. Unbelievable. I think you could make a pie that was 18 feet across just from one rhubarb plant. I mean, it is amazing how sunlight does its trick, mm-hmm. you know. Everything up there is enormous. It's a general thing. The blueberries up there are enormous.
Really?
I mean, they just get so much sun. Of course, the bad news is nothing grows in the winter, but that's okay. You've got to save all that. So what are some things, again, that we can do? Because it's too early to really clean up and put everything to bed. But we are going to be starting to do some pruning up and some paring up, and we do want to be careful, like you said, always use hygiene with bleach and with other things to make sure that you're not cross-contaminating.
Right. And one thing, too, while we're on the idea of planting this time of the year, if you plant on the south side of a house or a building, then that's a little bit easier, too, because you're going to get all the north wind that's blocked. So if I have something I want to plant early in the year or late in the year, then I try to put it by my garage, and then it's going to just, sometimes all winter long, it's going to be able to stay alive, even if there's snow on top of it.
Yeah. Well, and again, when it comes to fertilization, I mean, should we be trying to, like, I've got these grapes. Mm-hmm. I've got hostas. You know, obviously, I've got a few things that are still growing, you know, even bushes and trees. Should I be fertilizing now? Is this now the time to fertilize and give them that last little bit of juice before they go into their dormant state, or the grapes, you know, now before we pick them? Or is, you know, I'm worried about the grapes. I don't think you should fertilize too close to picking because you'll get that fertilizer taste if you're not careful.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that particular last question, but yes, if you're going to be fertilizing, you don't want to do it much later than now.
So get all that in there.
Because, again, you don't want these things to be growing up really high and and it's not stored in the roots. If it's something that's an annual, then that's different.
Yeah, but, you know, because obviously it doesn't matter. So if you want to try to get that last bit out of them, go ahead and fertilize it. But when you've got your perennials or you've got your bushes and shrubs and trees, now we're kind of in a drought.
Yes,
let's talk about watering.
Okay, and then I also want to talk about a cover-up campaign,
too,
if you get...
A politician? No, not that kind of cover-up. Okay.
Well, you can do, you know...
Watering and the cover-up campaign. Okay.
Right, so that you don't frost things out. Yes, the watering is kind of tricky. It's usually good if you have drip hoses or some kind of an irrigation system. That's good. Were we talking about this just the two of us, I guess, here? We didn't talk about this a minute ago.
We did. You said be careful because if the irrigation system shoots up, it'll give you mold and stuff on your leaf.
Yes.
So be careful. You want to drip water.
Right.
You know, you want to slowly put the water out if you can.
If it's breezy, I have this little method that I've been using this year with my wands. You know, I have the wands, and you have certain wands that when you're watering plants, you don't want like a lot of heavy pressure on there. You want something that's a bit of a mist. Well, I've discovered on both my wands this really nice mist area that I'll put that, like I have in the fairy garden, and I have it in other areas where I'm not too worried about fungus. And it's fascinating how after I do that, and my garden helper will testify to this.
Get closer to that microphone, Deb. You're getting off of it. Thank you.
That sometimes, you know, after you do that, you'll look at it half an hour later, and the colors are brighter. So that might be the best way at the time to get some moisture into the plant, the top part. But if you're doing that, again, you don't want to do it too late into the evening. And I like to do that only if there's a nice breeze, so all that water's going to be there, soak in, but I don't have to worry too much about a fungus situation throughout the night.
What about trees? You know, we're a Tree City, USA. We have one young tree on our property, a couple that are not quite so young, and it's just amazing when you think how fast a tree grows.
Mm-hmm.
We planted a sunset maple, I think it's called, and I remember Greg and I could pretty much stand by this sunset maple, and it was about as tall as we were. So, you know, it was 5 feet, 6 feet tall. Now the thing shades our deck. It's amazing. I thought, well, I'll never live to see that tree grow tall enough to get much shade out of it, but the people that buy the house next time will be happy we planted it. But that darn thing, of course, I watered it, I fertilized it, I took care of it, you know, I really gave it all the good stuff it needed. But, you know, when it comes to watering, how do you know? Because obviously trees stand for all time and eternity, so they have really deep root systems. But if it's a newer tree, should we be supplementing that watering?
Boy, it's a question that you just kind of have to use a little bit of common sense. You want it, when the trees are young, you need to be sure, like any plant, that they need a little bit more water then. And it's better to water them earlier in the day and they get soaked in. But then as they go along, they'll give you signs, just like the flowers and everything else do. Some of the leaves will start to turn a little bit a different color maybe, or the tips of the leaves will start to look shriveled up, or different trees will handle it in different ways. But if you start paying attention, you'll notice that, just like the same with your houseplants. You know, if you walk in and your houseplants are all just limping down, then you know that you need to have more water.
And I think another thing, you know, if you water your young trees or young plants too much,
yes, that's a
they
problem.
Won't go down.
Right.
Because all that water is right there on the surface.
Right.
So their little roots go,
they
oh, hey,
no,
we don't have to put any work into this.
The spring was nice because we had some rain, but not a whole lot at certain times. And so that allowed all the flowers and the vegetable plants to dig those roots down, because they had to go down and realize, boy, we're going to have to go deeper to be able to get some moisture. So if you have if you're planting a tree or anything that when you're doing these plantings and there's a lot of rain, then sometimes they never develop that ability. The tree would, but some of the vegetables and flowers, they're lazy.
And they think, well, this water's here, I don't have to do much for
right.
it. 3 weeks later.
At the time when they are growing their roots.
Yeah.
And as they get older, everything's going up and they're flowering. And so there's not that same growth that'll happen with the amount of growth for roots. So.
Okay. Well, if you're going to have to bring plants indoors
yes.
this fall, get your potting soil now, because you know they're going to take that off the shelf.
And spray them a little bit with water or something, because you don't want to bring any bugs in with you.
Yes. Well, of course, if you do a complete repot with bleach and everything, you can check that out thoroughly. But if you're lazy, like Deborah Lee and Mary Griffith, you might not get around to that. Take a break. We'll be right back. We're back at Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Oh, we're into something good. Okay. Deborah Lee is here, and she has just waited till the last 4 minutes of the show to announce something that we should have been talking about all hour, but I forgive you. You don't know what's important. You don't know how big a news this is. Viking Cruises has come to Hannibal, and one of the things that I keep saying, if we only had a dock. Well, apparently Quincy doesn't need a dock. They're coming here without a dock. They're coming from Hannibal. Deborah Lee, talk about what's happening. Viking Cruise passengers are going to be bused from the port of Hannibal to Four Winds Farm.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Tell us all about this, please.
Well, the goal was to have this in June into October, or early in the year. But they've had a lot of problems getting up the Mississippi River and getting everything inspected. So the maiden voyage is going to come on the 28th, Sunday the 28th. And they'll be with me for a couple of hours. And so the main goal is the heritage aspect of the medicinal herbs that I have. So that's going to be a focus. Viking likes to really focus on history and very erudite They said people that like that. So we're going to be doing that also at the same time. We're going to have our sunflower maize should be in full bloom during that time. And then Jessica planted about 3/4 acre of flower swirls. They're not cutting flowers like all the rest of them are. They're just to admire the beauty, and there's places where you can sit. And so we'll have a lot going on until the end of October out there, and the Viking Cruise Lines will be coming into October.
Now, this is so exciting because, again, we had the Chamber of Commerce director on, and one of the things she said was some Hannibal merchants and some Hannibal area business people have been saying, well, Viking hasn't done much for me. If you're on their tour schedule, if you get the bus that takes them to your business or takes them to your performance or takes them to your farm, you get a lot of benefit from that, obviously. Right. If you just rely on them to walk up and down the street, maybe come in your shop. How were you selected for this?
Well, first let me say that this is the first cruise for Viking coming up, so they're like months late. And so there are other boat lines that are there that in Hannibal. I was contacted. I think I know who recommended me, but I was contacted about 2.5 years ago. And so I signed a 3-year contract. And I'm really excited about that. I've had to do some changes to put in a whole septic system at the farm and a different kind of a wheelchair accessible toilet. But I'm excited. We can have up to about 50 people at a time in the big buses, and we're ready for them. I have handout materials for that they can take home and study, and just a lot of fun things for them.
That is exciting. So,
I do other bus tours too. I do the same thing for another group that came.
You know, this is exciting, and this is a part of tourism, agri-tourism, as we love to call it. You got to remember, we're so used to this around here, we don't think much about it, but people come from across the United States and other areas to go on that Mississippi River.
Well, these are coming from English-speaking countries, so it's going to be Australia, Canada, Europe, and the United States.
Watch out for the Aussies.
Yeah. But that's exciting for me.
Sure.
Because every country, if I imagine some of the people have a knowledge about medicinal and culinary herbs anyway, and there's that sharing opportunity, and I love that. I love to hear what other countries are doing or what their grandmothers did or great-grandmothers did.
Well, I tell you what, we have people that also speak other languages in our area, so if you ever do run across where you need French or Spanish or anything, an interpreter, that would help a lot because, you know, you are going to run into some cruises where an Asian language might be necessary or something. You're not going to be able to do that, but a great interpreter.
Well, they have the machines that, you know, I mean, they really know what they're doing.
Yeah, Viking knows what it's doing.
I think all the cruise lines probably do.
I'm aware. They're, you know, Viking, Carnival, Princess, they're all owned by the same company. So, you know, I mean, they all have their brand and everything, but educational tours is kind of like what Viking is most about. People that want to learn something. And mm-hmm. But, of course, they'll learn about Mark Twain. They'll learn about this. Now, is the sunflower maize so big that the Australians will get lost, or do you have a rescue dog that will help, or what's going to happen?
No, but we did find last year that Marco Polo was kind of common. If somebody couldn't find their child or something. But no, we have about, I think it's about 2 acres. And it's going to be a lot of fun. You never know exactly when the sunflowers are going to be in their prime.
So the 28th Sunday is when it's going to happen.
Yes.
Okay.
It's going to be for the Vikings.
That is going to be so exciting. Okay, Viking Cruise is coming to Adams County and Four Winds Farm. Let the money and the cash register ring. Bring those tourists
in.
Sure,
I'll take that.